Everyone, what a beautiful day. It's as beautiful as being Farage's dry cleaner. Let's hope he milks that gig. Hey, I'm Bibi Lynch and you're listening to Bibi Does Soho on your fantastic Soho radio. I'm all yours for the next 2 hours. Shall we do it?
Strangers
I'm Bibi Lynch, and that was D-Influence and Good Lover. Hey, how are you? What's been happening to me? I've got a rash. Producer Rach. I don't want to talk about it. Let me tell you about today's show. Our first guest is author Samuel Pollan. Samuel will be telling us about his debut novel, The Year I Didn't Eat, and all about his Soho. And in the second hour, we'll be joined by Friends O Show, the gorgeous ladies from Soho's Sejour Salon, here to tell us about the latest beauty trends. So please join in. Tweet at Soho Radio and at Bibi Lynch. Tweet and say hello. Or tweet and tell me where your irritation is. Don't say on air right now.
Oh,
This is BB Does Soho on Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. And that was Tina Marie, Lady T, and I Need Your Loving. Guess what? Our first guest is here. Welcome to Soho Radio, author Sam Pollan.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, your pleasure. So where did you go first?
Well, I went to your other studio.
Yes.
Yes. I have been running around Soho.
Yeah. Which studio do you prefer?
This one's
thank
lovely.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a lot of work. It's so mad to finally meet you. So we've been on Twitter. We've been friends on Twitter for 88 years.
Yes, approximately.
How did we find each other?
I don't even know. How does anyone find anyone on Twitter?
I always wonder, though. What was the first connection? I advertised for a lot of my people. No, I didn't. So I don't know where we met. So what's been really lovely, I think, because Twitter's ridiculous.
Yeah. Fair.
Okay, that's fair enough, right? Yeah, fair.
Agreed.
But what's been really lovely is, I think, for your friends to see the journey of your novel and how it's gone. And I think we all kind of feel part of the story.
That's nice. You are part of the story.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
That's lovely to hear.
Do you get nice feedback from your Twitter pals?
I do, yeah. I get, you know, people slide into my DMs every now and then and say something nice
about
my book. Not none of the weird ones. I just get the people saying nice things about the book, which is lovely.
So tell us about the book. So it's The Year I Didn't Eat.
Yeah. So The Year I Didn't Eat is a book is mainly aimed at teenagers, although I like to think anyone could enjoy it, about a 14-year-old boy called Max who has anorexia. And it's based somewhat on my own experience of that when I was about 12, 13.
So. And how long did your experience last?
A couple of years. I mean, it's very hard to kind of
put a sort
of start and an end on it, but a couple of years, yeah. So I was relatively fortunate as people with eating disorders go that it was kind of...
With, I guess, so well, lots of things to ask, but with YA books, do you put a different head on when you write it?
Yeah, not very consciously. I mean, I think I'm trying to write an interesting, compelling story, first and foremost. Obviously, there's a kind of age appropriateness in terms of some of the content.
But, language.
Yeah, exactly. But it's I think my voice quite naturally lends itself to that book. And that's what kind of people have said to me.
Yeah. So you're taking
it. Just did it. Yeah, exactly.
When you write about your own experience, well, A, it's really brave.
Thank you.
Was it brave? It was,
and it definitely felt like it was something I approached with some nervousness. It's worth saying that I'm now 31, so I was doing it a long time after this was something that affected me directly. And I think that was, you know, that was part of the reason I was able to do it, because I had that distance. But yeah, it's definitely... You're definitely sort of talking about something, and I think possibly particularly for men, I like to think it's changing a bit, but particularly for men, opening up about stuff like that is rarer.
Well, and when you were a kid, I mean, at least now, you know, back to Twitter again, it's craziness. But another positive thing is there's always a community. You can always kind of find the people you need to support you with whatever you need supporting with. When you were a kid, I was guessing that wasn't happening.
Yeah, that's
not
so.
Twitter,
so yeah, when I've been talking about this book to different people, and I went into a school last week and was talking to them about it, and I was kind of trying to get across the fact that we just about had dial up internet in my house when I was going through
you
this.
Were so
right,
lucky.
The internet was a thing, but it wasn't a big feature of your life, and certainly you didn't have a phone in your pocket and etc. So yeah, that's been, I think, that has brought lots of positive things for people who are going through mental health problems and kind of can't necessarily talk about them face to face or kind of want that. Mm. It's also brought negative things, I think, yeah. as well. You know, that's a mixed bag. But I think often we kind of say social media is a universally bad thing, whereas I think, yeah, exactly, you finding communities and finding people you can talk to about something is pretty important.
Well, who did you talk to though then? So did you have any kind of network?
Yeah, no, not so. I didn't know anyone else who was going through an eating disorder. I didn't know anyone else who had been through an eating disorder. I mean, different types of treatment work in different ways. So some people will go to like a residential facility or something where they're kind of working with other people who've yeah. been through it. I had my family and friends, you know, and teachers at school and things like that, but no network that particularly knew anything about eating disorders.
I guess another good thing about the book is it's for young adults, but also for adults looking at it, think there must be inadvertently advice on how people should deal with this, because yeah. I mean, your family, I guess, wouldn't have had any experience of that.
Right, they didn't, and I think, you know, I think they did well in the circumstances, but they didn't, and I think that's a situation lots of families find themselves in, because it's such a hard thing to get your head around if you're not going through it, and they just don't really know what to do. So yeah, one of the things that's kind of brought out in the book is Max's relationship with his parents and with his brother. And how they kind of help him through it. And I think I hope that is useful to families of people who are going through this.
Yeah. If I ask anything too personal, throw something at me. Or just say it is too personal.
That's
both.
All good.
Both. How bad did it get for you?
How bad did it get? I was, I think I probably didn't quite clock on to how bad it was in some ways. So the big thing that happened that sort of ended up with me actually getting treatment was I got the flu, and I was very, very thin at this point. You know, I was very kind of weak, and I couldn't go to the doctors, and I couldn't we had to get a call out doctor really? to come to my house to see me, and he kind of referred me for mental health treatment. And I think, you know, my family knew what was going on, but didn't necessarily know how to snap me out of it. So that kind of became the thing that I think for myself, on some level, I realized something had to happen. And then I went into treatment and was, you know, it takes a long time, takes months and months and months, but was relatively smooth in terms of recovery from that point. Yeah.
What's the treatment? How does the treatment work? Does that differ?
There's lots of different approaches. I had what's called CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy, I think, which is quite yeah. a common sort of psychological treatment for lots of mental health things, which is sort of tackling the irrational thoughts that you have as part of a mental health problem and kind of really like rationalizing them away. I also you tend to see a nutritionist if you're going through an eating disorder, because there's a quite practical thing of like your physical health, yeah. right? You're potentially very skinny. It often weakens your bones, weakens some of your organ systems, kidneys, and things like that. So there's you're also doing that as, yeah. at the same time.
Did you ever get to the bottom of what caused it? I mean, I'm going to say it's a control thing, but is that a really classically wrong thing to say?
No, I don't think that's a classically wrong thing to say. I think it's probably it's a relatively simple explanation, but I think it is true. Certainly lots of people who go through eating disorders have that thing where they're just quite anxious people who want to do well and want to impress the people around them, and kind of have a lot of sort of general social anxiety about that. And particularly when, you know, if you're young, if you're a teenager, that becomes like you worrying about exams and worrying about your performance in life generally. But there's, you know, it arises from lots of different, there's a genetic component, and there's, you know, certain demographics are more likely
genetic.
To have it than others. Yeah, so I believe it's much more likely for you to have an eating disorder if a parent or a sibling or something like that has an eating disorder. So it's a pretty complex picture, yeah.
But it's still about control. I got it right, Sam.
Yeah, essentially you nailed it. But I had to say something to fill the time.
I know. With Max's story, I mean, of course, we're going to go into it as well, but, you know, you've got incredible reviews, which I'll read out in a minute, and it's a very funny book, and it's very uplifting, and, you know, because we do, but also it is just so interesting, it's so pertinent, isn't it? And I love that you're Zuntold, such a great name, the publisher's called Zuntold, and so your book, The Year I Didn't Eat, is their first novel in their fiction as therapy arm.
Yeah.
I love the sound of that.
Yeah. So I think I certainly, you know, fiction on a good day is about imagining the world from someone else's point of view, right? That's kind of what all books makers do. So I, you know, it's untold thing, and I agree with the idea that if you can do that in mental health and kind of help give people a bit of a broader understanding of things, that experiences people are going through, that can help both those people feel seen and feel kind of understood, and also help people around them kind of get their head around what they're going through.
Yeah, like right now, I mean, how bad is eating disorder world and mental health? I mean, I guess they're totally linked, but right now, what are the stats? So are more boys suffering from it now than before, or are we just hearing that now? They're brave.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of an ongoing debate. Is certainly many more boys and men than in the past are being diagnosed with eating disorders, and I think that is partly awareness, right? That is partly we are uncovering cases that wouldn't have ever come to light in the past, but also I think it probably is a growth in the actual kind of suffering. You know, eating disorders is a kind of weird mental health problem in that it's so food is something we all deal with every day.
Yeah.
We all have to eat, and everyone, you know, that's a very hard situation in which to deal with a mental health problem. And then I think we've created a world where everyone is worrying a lot day to day about how other people see them and how they relate to everyone around them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a bad recipe for eating disorders.
Yeah. it's a lose-lose. It's tricky.
Yeah.
It's tricky. So I was surprised. Right. So I knew you were a writer, and then this is your debut, isn't it?
Yeah.
Congratulations. Right. How did you celebrate? How did you celebrate when you got your deal?
How did I celebrate? I wasn't with my wife, my partner, and I wanted to tell her first. So I think I did I went and got a McDonald's milkshake, or I did something completely innocuous.
Don't mention milkshake.
I bought hot topic at the moment, I know. But I did something completely bland. And then later on we went out for dinner and had a night out and stuff. But you know, nothing wild.
Nothing
sadly, wild. Sadly, publishing budgets these days mean you can't do the, you know, 6 weeks in Bali or whatever I might have done otherwise.
Just a strawberry milkshake, please, would be lovely.
Yeah, exactly.
When you finish writing it, so I know it's never finished because you've got your first draft up, but when you see, I've never written a book and I'm full of envy and I'm going to write, I'll talk to you about your process. But when you finished, so you're like, you type the end, right?
Yeah.
And I know exactly how you typed, and you typed the end. Then did you light up a cigarella? Feet up? Little Jack and Splash?
Oh gosh, I can't even remember that moment. I think what I probably did is go to bed because it was probably some ungodly hour. I tend to write either in the very early morning or late at night, just because I have a day job and stuff normally fills my day. So I tend to be writing in weird pockets of time. So yeah, I probably went to bed, which is, I know, is not the triumphant answer you're looking for.
Next time.
Yeah, next time I'll do something
grand. You've got to do something grand. So talking about your wife, your partner, this is, so I knew you were a writer, but I was surprised when I heard what the book was about, because I had no idea. I mean, why would I know that you'd suffered from anorexia? But the reason I doubly didn't know is because you post a lot of really brilliant food.
Right.
And this
yes.
is, and I know this is a real kind of crass thing to say, but I guess anyway, that kind of makes sense of it as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's a way, clearly everyone's recovery from an eating disorder is different.
Yeah.
And I happen to have been lucky enough to not really have any ongoing problem with it, but also I have this hilarious footnote to the whole thing where I married a food writer and chef.
It is brilliant.
And also spend, you know, quite a bit of time cooking and make bread and stuff myself. So yeah, I've had a kind of a heavy involvement in food for someone who's had that experience. But yeah, I think it does, you know, as soon as that kind of irrational thing goes away, I've spent a lot of my time, a lot of my life thinking about food in all sorts of ways.
But now in a positive way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the book's positive.
The book is positive. The book is, I wanted it to be, you know, I think it's enjoyable as a book, ignoring any usefulness around eating disorders. I hope it is enjoyable as a book. I hope it's funny. Like, I think, you know, people have told me that it's funny, and it's kind of, it's one thing we don't see a lot of books about, I think, is that experience of growing up as a teenage boy and just all of the other, you know, quite apart from eating disorders, all the other stuff that you're going through at that age. A lot of books for boys. Not that I think books should be thought of in that gendered way, yeah. but a lot of books that are written for boys tend to be kind of adventure story, you know, bigger, grander, more action-filled things. And I think it is quite nice to just look at, like, the friendships that you have when you're a 14-year-old boy and the things that affect your life.
So what does Max get up to?
So he plays a lot of video games. He goes to he's massively into biology and zoology. So he goes to the zoo and he watches birds. He's very interested in,
I love
birds.
Max.
Yeah, he's quite an indie. He's like a very nice. I basically wrote the teenager I wish I'd been, essentially.
he's nice, like a Sam.
Yeah, sanitized version of me. but yeah, so he does all of that kind of stuff and a particular plot. Kind of line revolves around him getting into geocaching, which I don't know if you know what geocaching is.
What the hell?
So geocaching is kind of like orienteering. So you download an app and you can you find coordinates, so you can kind of navigate to somewhere where someone has left a geocache, but they'll be hidden and there'll be some clue about exactly where it is. And there's a few in Soho. Like there's ones all around everywhere.
You've got to describe to people what my face is doing.
You're looking at me like why did I invite this person
on
the radio?
I mean, what? What do you win?
You win the it's a puzzle.
Don't
say
respect.
You win there, you kind of a lot of them are kind of interestingly hidden and you kind of, some of them do have a prize for like the first person to find it. They often have a little thing hidden in them, but it'll be like a little matchbox or like there's all sorts of different ones. but yeah, it's like orienteering, I guess. Yeah. You're kind of doing it for the joy of finding the things.
Poor Max. That's what you're making him do in the book. Poor Max. When you wrote the book, did you find out stuff? Did you revisit and then discover more about you and your experience through writing it?
Yeah, I think I did. I think you don't, when you are 12, 13, 14, when I was going through this, you do not introspect very much.
Yeah.
And even if you're going through some kind of mental health problem, you don't necessarily kind of, and you certainly don't have the perspective that allows you to look at who actually helped you and who was there and what practically you did that helped you get through it. And I think going through that was really cathartic and allowed me to sort of thank some people who'd helped me. Yeah. And also a really interesting part of it was people who I knew at the time getting in touch with me and saying I had no idea. So I think I was very thin and I was, you know, kind of to me quite obviously ill. But when you are a 13-year-old boy, you don't look at you never look at each other, you know, like there's a kind of, you just don't notice stuff like that.
Yeah.
And one thing I wanted to get across in the book is that, you know, part of what makes Max's experience really hard is lots of people just don't quite clock that anything is happening.
And he's a kid, so he doesn't really understand it either, except that he knows he's not in good shape. How did you thank people? Was it like, you know, a late night phone call? Hello, I don't know if you remember me.
I didn't. So I'm a very kind of British emotionally repressed person, right? So it wasn't some big grand thing, but you know, I sort of talked to them about the fact that I was writing it, and you know, I recently exchanged emails. I'm gonna go and see him when I'm next up in, I'm from near Manchester, so I haven't been able to see him, but a teacher who let me hang out in his, so I wasn't allowed to do sports games when I was when I had anorexia, and that would have been something that was quite embarrassing if I had to sort of talk about it. So he was like, well, come and work in my office. He was like the head of department, right? He's like, come and work in my office, read a book, whatever you're gonna do during that time. So I've since reconnected with him and talked to him about that and how helpful that was to me, which I think he hadn't really clocked or he'd forgotten, because you know, he's ever seen however many hundreds of students.
Yeah, but that impacts on you.
Yeah, but it made a big difference to me.
Yeah. Oh, Sam, let's talk about your writing routine. Okay, I write for a living. I mean, I say a living is a pound a month, but you know, why? So you work full time and then you will write top and tail of the day.
Yeah. So
I mean,
it's probably both the bad thing and the good thing about writing is that you can do it anywhere at any point, and you tend to often be, if you write stuff, you tend to be thinking about it a lot, right? So I often write a bit of a book, whatever I'm working on, at lunchtime, and I often get up early and do a little bit before I go to work, and sometimes I do a bit on my commute, and kind of like finding those little pockets of time to just write whatever I can.
But how does it work like that? Because don't you have to be in the zone and you sit down for 8 hours and then it feels like half an hour and you've lost 8 hours, but you've written three great chapters. The little pockets.
So that has never been my experience. I've never been someone who, I know other writers who you know, they lock themselves in a room for a weekend and write 10,000, 20,000 words. I would love to be that productive, but I can't be. I will write, if I write sort of 250 words, 500 words in a day in the little bits of time, I think that's good. And, you know, I don't think there's a, for me, it's not so much about, I'm going to rewrite it anyway, right? That's almost everyone rewrites stuff that they write. And I don't necessarily, I think kind of being distracted and kind of the thing that comes to mind, it doesn't all make linear sense when I look at it, but it allows me
process.
To produce the stuff. Yeah.
It's your process. Yeah. Zuntold sound good. They sound nice.
Yeah, no, they've been great. They've been great, and they've been very sort of, you know, we got really nice press, and it's kind of been it's all very different.
Well,
little.
Speaking of, yes, if I may throw some review, brilliantly done, then, if you don't mind saying, amazing reviews, moving and hilarious, best new children's and YA 2019. That's The Guardian, a clever and touching novel in which anorexia looms over the narrative like the monster in a horror show. Best children's and YA of 2019. The Telegraph, strikingly honest and much needed. Eve Simmons, The Mail on Sunday. So I do highly recommend it. It's just. I think it's so brave to write something like this, but I think it's brilliant you are. And you were saying earlier that you don't want any book to be gender orientated, but actually specifically this is quite important that it's for boys, because boys aren't heard in this conversation. Yeah. So it's kind of needed. The Year I Didn't Eat is out now, published by Zuntold. For updates on all Samuel's brilliant projects, go visit samuelpollan.com and follow him on Twitter at Samuel_Pollan.
BB Does Soho. Lucky Soho.
I'm BB Lynch and you're listening to Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. Coming to you from our amazing new studio on Broadwick Street. I'm joined in the studio by the wonderful Samuel Pollan, and it's time for My Soho.
Soho Radio. My Soho with BB Lynch.
Aren't the jingles brilliant?
Yeah, great.
I love that. Is that a jingle or is that a sting? Is that a sting? Sting. She has no idea. I didn't know she is.
So it was a confident answer.
Yeah, she did say it very confidently. So you're from Manchester?
Yes.
Oh, I lived in Manchester for a year. Cool. I love Manchester.
I'm specifically, I don't know how much you know. Okay. I grew up in Wilmslow.
Okay, no
just
idea.
Just south of Cheshire. Just south of Manchester.
But it's still lovely.
Manchester is close enough.
Manchester's close enough.
Yeah, I know. It's great. And it's when I go back now, baffled the transformation in Manchester.
Oh,
I just
seriously?
Can't get my head around it. Yeah.
It's such a beautiful city, isn't it?
Yeah.
So when you were a kid in Manchester and you're hearing the word Soho, the name of this region, so of this area, Soho, what did that evoke in you? What did that make you think?
I'm not sure I did here. It's the short answer. So
I first came to London
when I was like 12 or something. Like, London was not a feature of my life, and the first big city I lived in was New York. So, or
what?
The first, you know, beyond Manchester, next tier up in terms of city.
Seriously?
Yeah. So I went after I graduated and went and worked for a year in New York, which was great and lots of fun, but meant that like I've always sort of it took a long time for me to get my head around London. I guess I came here when I was when I was 22, 23, okay. Something like that. And yeah. It was a whole new experience
so,
at that point.
I want to talk about Soho, about New York a bit. The northern quarter bit of Manchester, is it true that it's often used for films to be New York? It does have that look, doesn't it?
I've heard that. I don't know. I've also heard that about Toronto, though. So I wonder if it's just one of those rumours that people put around whenever they want
a film made.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. People, you know, Swindon. People always use Swindon, don't you?
Penge. So what were you doing in New York? Writing?
I was working in photography. I worked in a photography studio. At the time, photography was my thing. That was what I was going to do. I think I learned while I was doing that. It was an internship, essentially. And I think I learned while I was doing that that the photography industry is particularly thankless and hard to kind of make your mark in.
More than writing.
So I enjoyed it. I'm not sure. Writing, I then kind of... Writing, again, has that thing of you can... I've kind of done it around the edges. So I then went back to doing things that weren't really... I was working in advertising and things like that. And I kind of picked up writing as part of that and sort of slowly drifted into it. So I didn't have to make a kind of active choice.
You might do both.
Yeah.
I'm doing that with my fingers, that's two. But you might do photography and copy around it.
Yeah, and I think my photography skills are pretty rusty these days.
Okay,
I have to say.
So when you were in... So your first time in Soho then, do you remember that?
First time in Soho, yeah. Do I remember that? Well, I remember... Yeah, I think I do, in a sort of blurry night out kind of way, but I'm not sure I identified it as Soho for some time, would be the honest answer.
What does Soho mean to you now? So you work here?
Yeah, so I work here. So I've worked here for 5-6 years, something like that. I love working in Soho. It's gnarly and interesting I don't spend a lot of time in West London other than in Soho.
Yeah.
And I think it stands out as the bit of West London that I really like.
Yeah.
Because it has that, you know, that energy of things.
It's funny that you think of it as West London because it is, isn't it, postcode wise? Yeah. But I guess I mean, put that, yeah.
I'm coming at that from the perspective of someone who lives in Walthamstow.
Okay.
So, like, most of London is West London to me.
Yeah. I love that you still say, you think that, or you say that Soho still has that gnarliness because often people think it's been so gentrified that it's too smooth now and it's too corporate.
But yeah, I think certainly, you know, it's a highly gentrified place and there's lots of nice restaurants and stuff, but if you walk down the back streets and stuff, they're still nicely scuzzy.
Oh, nicely scuzzy, that's your second book.
Yeah,
you can
nicely
have that.
Scuzzy, it's like a London novel. Yeah.
I love that. We always ask my Soho guests to think of three songs that for whatever reason just like make them think of Soho, and you chose Soho Square by Kirsty MacColl. Why did you choose that one?
So I know that's a kind of very obvious choice.
It's because a great
it literally
one,
has Soho in the name, but it is a song that my wife got me into. She absolutely loves it, and we had it sort of at our wedding and
did
stuff
you?
Like that. So it's a big song, but it's very sort of, you know, haunting, nice song.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at describing musical stuff. Nice song.
It's a nice song.
It's the criticism I brought
review.
You. It's a nice song.
Good God, let's play it.
Before my birthday.
Kirsty McCall and Soho Squares. We got a lovely tweet from Miss Olivia Potts.
My wife.
Oh, your wife. And she's obviously very pleased to hear Samuel Pollan on Soho Radio, BB Lynch, but particularly delighted that Sam's photos of my food got a shout out. Never not. 60 to 70% narcissistic and seeking validation. Well done. I think that's a healthy amount.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a healthy amount. So we were just talking. Obviously, we weren't talking over the track because we were giving it the due of respect it deserves. But you know when you hear that someone's died, and that moment is like sealed, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I was in a gym off Elgin Avenue, actually on Elgin Avenue, by the tennis courts, everyone. And I was chatting to a girl that I just made friends with a few days before, and then she came in that day, and she was all like, you know, look terrible. And I said, oh, what's up? And she was one of Kirsty McColl's backing singers, and she told me she'd just heard she died. Yes. And then you were saying about...
So I was saying about when Michael Jackson died. Yes. That was the night I was back in, I was in a university graduation ceremony. It was the night we all went out after that had occurred. And this news, we were in a club, which is, I don't go to clubs anymore. But we're in a club at the time. And this news kind of spread through the group of people. And it's a weird, and it is a very fixed, lots of times I've been in a club and not particularly fixed in my mind.
Yeah,
let's put it like that.
Yeah.
But it was... it just crystallised. I can remember every, you know, what it all looked like, and then you have
who's
this kind of photo.
Who's the person that breaks bad news to you most?
Who's the person that breaks bad news?
Even celebs' deaths, for instance.
Well, celebs' death, I often have the experience of not knowing who the celebrity was, right? So I would say it's usually my wife, just because she's there a lot of the time, and she often says, "Oh, X has died," and I go, "Who's that?" And she gets very annoyed with me. I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm not trying to be that person who's above the thing.
Yeah,
I'm just clueless, basically.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, that's good. My brother Patrick tells me, I was in bed with a mini milk.
As you did.
As you were. And Pat sent me a text saying about Michael Jackson, and then he rang me up when Amy Winehouse died.
Right, that's just his role.
I never see him. just the odd call.
Brings you bad
just
news.
Just the odd call. And my sister let me know when Prince died with a little text. I never know. Anyway, this is
we got bleak quickly,
pleasant,
didn't
this isn't
it?
I've got loads of Soho questions to ask you. What's your favourite Soho bar, restaurant, or venue?
So I think I would say French House, which is very old school. I've been there many, many times, and I believe it's now got new. It's fancied up a bit, gussied up a bit, I think.
Oh,
it's got like...
We don't want that.
Yeah, well, I've heard good things, so it might be very lovely.
Okay.
But I remember sort of going, early days of Soho, going there for some sort of French cider and like a steak frites or whatever, right? Exactly. And it sort of just felt very like timeless.
Oh, it feels Soho, doesn't it? Yeah. Best gig you've seen?
Best gig I've seen would probably be... I saw a comedy duo called The Pin.
The Pin.
Who do some BBC stuff. And they do Edinburgh show, which they brought to the Soho Theatre last year. And that was brilliant. I don't watch a lot of live comedy, but it was, exceeded all expectations.
What's good about them?
So it's very sort of surreal. So the show is, I know one of the people in it, I should say, Ben Ashenden. He's a brilliant comedian and sort of character actor and all kinds of things. But the show is very fourth wall-y. So it's all about they're the substitute act trying to supplant the main act, and they keep going. It's kind of has a farce quality to it, right?
Oh,
so they keep going around the back, and then it's the main act performing, and then they're sort of trying to get them off
stage.
Oh, I
like the sound of this.
That's good. It's very surreal, but good.
So why don't you go to more comedy?
Do
you hate comedians?
No, I don't hate comedians. I think live comedy, I think live anything is patchy, right? And I'm too lazy. essentially. Yeah.
Who's your favourite Soho character? Did you ever think about this one? It's a tricky one.
So I'm a bit of a history nerd.
Okay.
So I picked historic...
Yeah.
And I don't know if this was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But I picked Joseph Banks, who was the guy who basically established the Botanical Gardens in Kew, but lived in Soho Square. And was a pioneering horticulturalist and scientist. I think it's probably not the kind of person people normally pick.
No,
for
I've
Soho,
never heard of him.
It's
I love
a historical
that.
thing. But
and did he do
it's very interesting
here as well?
Did he? I think he just lived here. No, the short answer is no. Bit, yeah. I know that's a slightly disappointing answer, but no, it was just he is the person. When I think of Soho, yeah. I know everyone else probably thinks of musicians and stuff. Yeah. I think of him and Jon Snow, the epidemiologist. Snow. Yeah. Yeah.
Which, and the pub's here, isn't it?
And it's just, we're yards away from the pump.
Is there a plaque?
There is a plaque on his house, I believe, yes.
Did you
put
it there?
Nice blue plaque. No.
Actually,
no,
a proper one.
Yeah, just...
Would you like a plaque?
I'd take a plaque, yeah.
Where would you have the plaque?
Yeah.
Where would you,
are you
where
offering?
Would you take sure. Where would you... You get no fee, but there's a blue plaque. Where would it go? Your New York place?
London, where would it go?
Manchester?
I think it would probably go on a tree on the common land near my house where I grew up, which is like where I spent a lot of my... I had people who read the book will see that there is a lot of it written about being in the woods and being on your own in the woods. But I had a very much beloved golden retriever called Waffle when I was a teenager.
Waffle.
And I used to walk her on this common land and spent a lot of... That was like my happiest place. I spent a lot of time there.
Oh, what a lovely answer. I love that. Oh, Waffle. Your second choice...
Yes, my second
choice. Do you remember
what it was? I do. It was continuing the theme of choosing songs. I said to you when I sent these over, I was like, apparently I just choose songs with Soho in the name because that my mind is that basic and literal. Although this is not in the title. This is just in the text of the song. So it is Lola by the Kinks.
Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes like Coca-Cola. C-O-L-A-Cola. She walked up to me and she asked me to dance. I asked her her name and in a dark brown voice she said Lola. L-O-L-A Lola. La 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 Lola. Thank you.
Kinks and Lola. Lots of children are called Lola. It's a nice name. Girls, mainly.
Mainly girls.
It's a lovely name.
Lola.
It's a good name. Lola. Sam. So, yes, BB.
Yes.
BB.
Yes, BB.
If money and time are no object, how would you spend your ideal day or night or weekend?
So what I would do is I would go for lunch at Bone Daddy's.
Yes.
Which I just love. I mean, I'm conscious I've come on and talked about a book about eating disorders and now I'm going to talk about food in lots of detail. But the wings they do there and the... Well, yeah, I'm very into that. And my favourite experience when I went there is I went there with my wife. So I feel like I've talked about my wife a lot. But she was just getting into food at the time and she was sniffing this thing on the table. She was like, what is this? This is lovely. And it turned out it was the hairbands that they have to tie your hair back so you don't get it in the ramen. So anyway, I guess... yeah, so she's a real foodie. So I would go to Bane Daddy's and then I would probably take my little dog, Ruby.
Oh, hi, Ruby.
Yeah, I'd probably take her along to, well, I know this isn't really Soho, but St. James Park.
Okay, sure.
Because we just go down there. And when I bring her into the office sometimes, we go down there and she's fascinated by the pelicans and she runs around and rolls in the goose poo and all of the fun.
Do you take her to work?
I do. Not so much lately, but yeah, sometimes. Wow. She likes it. She likes Soho. And she goes down well. She's a little golden cocker spaniel.
She's beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And so I'd do that. Mm-hmm. And then I think I'd go for sort of cocktails, dinner, that whole
thing. What's your favourite drink? Let me guess. G&T.
No,
you do. You're just acting like you don't like G&T.
I like G&T. I like everything. But my choice would be an old fashioned, and I know that is the choice of the moment, and that's like the default man drink to order everywhere. But
You've been doing it for years.
Exactly. I was there before it was
newfangled. Yeah, when it was newfangled.
Exactly. When it was newfangled. Yeah.
Can I have a newfangled, please?
So yeah, I have an old fashioned.
Yeah.
Couple of old fashions, and then I'd have dinner at, I think, Quo Vadis, probably.
Yeah.
But some nice kind of.
Would you go
posh
home,
dinner.
Or would you end up staying in some hotel here? Because you're too drunk.
Well, because I've lived in London all of the time I've been in London, I've never really checked out Soho hotels.
Yeah.
So I don't know what. Okay. That, I mean, I, yeah, because I'd
later,
like to see one, but I don't know.
Yeah, there's some nice places. Sum up Soho in 3 words, please.
Yes, this is really hard.
Is it?
So I think I would say gnarly, because I've used that word a lot.
I love it.
Fun.
Yeah.
And weird.
Yeah. It's like this show, isn't it? It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
that's this experience.
There you go. The year I Didn't Eat is out now, published by Zuntold. For updates on all Samuel's brilliant projects, go visit samuelpollen.com and follow him on Twitter at Samuel_Pollen. It's been so lovely to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me on. I've had a great time.
Pleasure. Thank you for coming in. And introduce, please. Now, this is an unusual one.
Yeah, this is where I finally decided to choose a song that wasn't just obviously about Soho. So my understanding of the origin of the name Soho is that it was a hunting call.
Yeah, Soho.
And this place, which is baffling when you're here, but used to be like hunting land, right? It was the bit of hunting land near London. Now I don't have I'm not a huge fan of hunting generally, that's not a thing, but I love Tom Lehrer, the comic musician of the sort of 60s, I think, and he wrote a song called The Hunting Song, which is very silly, and yeah, I had to pick that as the third one.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Will remember 'twas a year ago November. I went out to hunt some deer on a morning bright and clear. I went and shot the maximum the game laws would allow, 2 game wardens, 7 hunters and a cow. I was in no mood to trifle. I took down my trusty rifle and went out to stalk my prey. What a haul I made that day. I tied them to my fender and I drove them home somehow. 2 game wardens, 7 hunters and a cow. The law was very firm, it took away my permit, the worst punishment I ever endured. It turned out there was a reason, cows were out of season, and one of the hunters wasn't insured. People ask me how I do it, and I say there's nothing to it. You just stand there looking cute, and when something moves, you shoot. And there's 10 stuffed heads in my trophy room right now. 2 game wardens, 7 hunters, and a cow. Yes, the law was very firm. It took away my permit, the worst punishment I ever endured. It turned out there was a reason. Cows were out of season, and one of the hunters wasn't insured. People ask me how I do it, and I say there's nothing to it. You just stand there looking cute, and when something moves, you shoot. And there's 10 stuffed heads in my trophy room right now. 2 game wardens, 7 hunters, and a purebred Guernsey cow.
BB Does Soho. With BB Lynch.
Some good looking ladies in here, man. This ought to cheer you up a little bit, Alex.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. I can't help it, man. I still think about her.
Yeah, I know it's hard to forget sometimes.
Yeah, it's rough sometimes.
Excuse me, Mr. O'Neill. There's a young lady over at the bar asking for you.
Nobody knows I'm here.
Well, I'm afraid she was quite insistent.
Oh, no. It's her.
Well, don't stand there, man. Go over and say something to her.
But I don't know what to say to her, man.
If you still care, it won't be hard.
It's been a long time. I can never think I was going to see you again. See you haven't changed.
featuring Alexander O'Neill and Saturday Love. Hey, welcome to the second hour of BB Does Soho. I'm BB Lynch and you're listening to Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture and we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. Coming to you from our beautiful new studio on Broadwick Street, come down and say hello, or if you're too shy to say hi, tweet us at Soho Radio or at BB Lynch. We would love to hear from you. So the brilliant Sam Pollan just entertained us with tales of his Soho, and in a few minutes the fabulous Sejour girls will be here to talk beauty trends. But first, ladies and gents, it's TLC and I'm Pretty.
Oh,
TLC. Tender Love and Care. What was Elvis's? You know Elvis Presley, Rach? Do you? Did you ever see Elvis sing live? Oh, look at her. That was Unpretty. TLC and Unpretty for producer Nick, who's in rehab today. So I don't think we should mark. Get well soon, Nick. So Elvis used to say TLC. And no, TCB, Taking Care of Business. I'm looking at Pam and Yaz from Sejour, and I have no idea what I'm talking about. Do you know who Elvis Presley is?
I know who Elvis Presley is.
Yaz, do you know who Elvis Presley is? Do you? Yeah. Okay, did you know that he would say TCB, Taking Care of Business, and he'd give people a car?
I wish.
I didn't know that.
Do you know that? No. And he had a little emblem, which was like a lightning bolt. I think I might have made that bit up. I'm not sure. Anyway, hey, welcome. Guess what? Hi. Our final guest here. Welcome back to Soho Radio, Friendzo Show. Yep. Pam and Yasmin, even though you're new, from Sejour. Yeah, two rounds of applause. How are you, Pam?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I am not bad, thank you. We were trying to work out, so we think it's about 3.5 years, 4 years since we last saw it.
Yeah, a long time.
Oh, why did you leave us?
Why did you not have us?
Oh, yeah. Do you not remember the incident with producer Nikki? And hello, Yaz, welcome.
Hello.
My sister's called Yasmin. You're Yasmin.
Yes.
Why are you Yasmin?
No idea.
Do you know anyone called Yasmin?
Yeah.
With an E or without an E?
With an E.
At the end?
Yeah.
Yeah. So my aunt is Yasmin with no E. My sister's Yasmin with an E, and you're Yasmin.
Actually really annoys you when people
call you Yasmin.
Yeah.
I get Jasmine, Yasmin.
Oh. Well, I get Phoebe, which is a beautiful name, but it's no BB. So you know, if you're Yasmin, you don't even... Anyway, welcome. We're talking about congratulations on your tummy.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, boy or girl?
Boy, another
really?
Boy, yeah.
How many boys you got?
This will be my third.
Really?
Yeah.
What's that about? You've got your very own BGs. What's that about?
Oh, well, I don't quite know. I'm starting my own football team, I think.
You must.
It seems at this point.
Are they, have you chosen names yet?
Oh, no, I'm struggling.
Should we do that now? Elvis.
Give it. No.
Yasmin.
TBC.
TBC. TBC. TCB.
Oh, Taking Care of
TSP. RSVP. Oh, God, what the hell's going on? So we met a million years ago, and so Pam owns and runs the brilliant Sejour salon on Frith Street. It's just so beautiful there. We love it. And Pam, you always just come on, and it was super fun. And Yasmin's here, and you're the salon manager?
Yes.
Is that right? So did Sejour start kind of when Soho did, about 5 years ago?
Yeah, roughly around the same time. That's how we sort of met up.
Yeah.
And we were both...
Well, how we met up was you sent a press release to Adrian, Mr. Soho Radio, and he sent it to me, and the implication was that I'm so ugly, you need help.
That wasn't from you.
No, that was strictly from Soho Radio. If anyone needs this press release, it's you, Bobo. So how's business been?
Yeah, really well. We're growing, and we've been doing really good.
So tell me what's new.
What's new at Sejour?
At Sejour.
So we've just brought in a new treatment, which is the...
Strawberry lift.
Now, tell me everything, because I think you might be having a little freckly visitor very soon.
This is basically laser liposuction.
Yeah.
So it's not as invasive as sort of surgery. It sort of decreases the circumference of the jaw area.
Does it work?
Yeah, it's really good.
How do you know it works?
You see results straight after, and it keeps working for 12 weeks.
And then do you need it every 12 weeks?
You just need about 2 to 4 max.
Really? And how? And so what does it do? How does it work?
It uses laser treatment to basically, it drains the fat through the lymphatic...
It heats up the fat tissues and then it drains through your lymphatic drain...
And ultrasound, which tightens the skin. And
so that's what I was going to say, because if you get rid of the substance...
where does it go?
And then you retighten it.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's why it
God.
Can take up to 12 weeks to see the full results, because like that, it takes a while for your body to sort of disperse it through your system.
And so how many sessions would you have? You have 3 sessions, so every 4 weeks?
Well, they sort of say anywhere between 2 to 4. So some people only need 2 and leave a 2-week gap.
Yeah.
And then some people might need that extra two or one.
It's personal preference as well, depending on
how
much you want.
I want it all done. Oh, my God.
It's really good because your double chin area is such a stubborn place. Mm. I know when I lose weight, I still have a double chin after. So it's really good for that stubborn area to help get rid of it.
So I guess you could use that on any bit of your body. Where they're stubborn.
Armpits. There is other machine...
Armpits? I don't know.
Bingoings, maybe.
Elbows, I don't know.
There is similar machines that you can use, but this one just concentrates on the sort of jowl and neck area.
And it's, do you know what, though? It's so perfect because historically, that area, the only way it could be treated would be surgery, wouldn't it be? Like a lower facelift, and who wants to kind of go that route? Exactly. Nowadays, really, is there any need to ever have surgery?
I don't really think so. Like, extreme cases, yeah, but there's so much technology out there nowadays and ways of doing things without having to go under a knife. Mm. I personally would prefer, some people want that quick fix.
Yeah.
These sort of ways take a bit longer. But I don't
know. Weeks, that's nothing. And I guess there's no downtime.
No.
So it doesn't even look red or...
No downtime.
God, this is amazing. Would it mess up my freckles?
No.
Are you sure? Yes, you sure? Yeah. But would it kind of... Because if you have freckly skin, you have a problem, don't you, with some treatments? If you have pigmented skin... I'm making stuff up. Isn't that true that it will attract the lasers go to the melanin?
That is true, but that's more for sort of laser treatments, hair removal. It can darken the pigment sometimes with laser treatments.
Oh my God, and then what happens?
Then you have to have more laser to get rid of the dark, dark pigments.
Win-win. Ka-ching. So, I'm going to ask a crass question because I like, you know, how much is it?
It's £300.
That's really good.
Per session.
That's really good.
We're actually doing a promo at the minute that if you buy the two, you pay £500. So it works out, you get each treatment for
£250. Yeah. Oh, my God. Sign me up. and tell me about lash lift as well, because I thought that sounded brilliant.
Yeah, everyone loves a lash lift.
It's really good for if you're more low maintenance, because it lasts 8 weeks and basically just perms your lashes up and then you tint them sort of really dark black. So it looks like you've curled your lashes and put mascara on.
Because don't lash extensions, isn't the danger they can pull out your natural lashes?
They can do, yeah.
And when you're on holiday, they're quite hard to look after. You can't go in the swimming pool a lot. You know, you have to brush them out.
You brush them?
Yeah. Whereas this is using all your natural lashes, so it's perfect for the holiday.
How much do you think it would cost to fix me?
Oh, you don't need fixes.
Just my face area.
No,
just my face to my boot. A grand. If I threw a grand at you, what could you do?
I'm not even answering that.
So they're the later, and have they been going well?
The lash lift, the strawberry lift this month very popular. Has gone crazy. Like, everyone wants a bit of it. We just had Michelle Collins in. And she got the skin tightening part, and her before and afters are unbelievable. So I don't know whether that's...
She's so gorgeous, isn't she?
She is lovely as well. I don't know whether that's made a surge of... But, yeah, everyone is loving it. And the lash lift always does well, I think, in the summer because of holidays and things like that.
And how much is lash lift?
£50.
Okay, that's cool. Each lash? And do you use, like... So will my eyes, like... Because I had my first perm when I was 9. Mm. Will my eyelashes smell like perm?
During the treatment, yes, but not after.
Doesn't it hurt your eyes?
No. Most people sort of go to sleep. Just relax. Because your eyes are shot for so long, they just...
Yeah. I had a root canal and nearly fell asleep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I like lying down.
You must really like it.
I love lying down. I can't tell you. So, I'm excited about it. And then you...
Yeah.
Promise me that you won't stop doing them.
Why would we?
I don't know, but I just have the fear because I want this, and then by the time I come to you and say, "Yeah, I want it," you're going to keep doing this, aren't you?
All our treatments, I and Jazz have gone through extensively. I believe in every treatment that we have on our menu, so it's not a sort of
fatty thing.
Yeah, it's not one of them. I'm very particular on what I choose, and it stays. Anything we've had from the even at the start, is still in our salon.
So how do you choose? So you must be... So do people salespeople kind of contact you and say, okay, there's this.
Sometimes, but then I think you just need that general interest in the industry. And I'm always like on the internet and I'm like, oh, this is a new treatment. Let me have a look at this, see what this does. So that is just your own sort of...
Yeah, the strawberry leaf was high demand. A lot of people have stubborn fat here that they're constantly hearing about, so...
Oh, I mean, you might have made my life.
I can't wait till I have this baby so I can actually have a treatment.
And that's a beautiful sentiment. Yeah. And you must tell little BB.
I love you, but I'm dying.
You must tell little Elvis. Mummy couldn't bloody wait. We're going to play a track. And then I want to talk more about my face. Oh, I love this track, Rach. I wrote this with us in mind. Talking about my face, it's not just about me. But seriously, what would you do with my eyes?
I told you, your face is fine.
Wow. Rach, Pam thinks I'm fat.
Pam can't talk right now.
Are you having a baby, Pam?
Yes, I'm very rotund.
Don't what's childbirth like?
Oh, that's a whole nother show.
Is that a whole nother show? Okay, we'll talk about that later. Maybe this would help. A little snake massage.
Maybe.
What the hell?
Oh, don't. So apparently it started off in Indonesia and it has now come to New York and will probably come to London because that's how it follows.
Is that true? Is it LA and New York the places where most of the beauty stuff starts?
Yeah, I would say usually New York is the...
New York over LA?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. Oh, definitely.
Okay.
And then we sort of...
Casey started in America, didn't it?
Did it?
He's actually English, but I know it took off in America before it took off over here. So,
is that vanity or bravery?
Bit of both.
And money.
Yeah.
So snake.
So basically, you lie down, they put loads of snakes on your body, and then it actually stimulates a nerve that then stimulates oxytocin and feel-good hormones in your body. And apparently that's it.
Did you believe that when you read that?
Well, a Victoria's Secret model has had one. That's how it's taken off.
What it stimulates is urine release.
Oh, stop.
And sheer fear.
Yeah, I don't.
So you lying on your back or your tummy?
Yeah, lying on your back.
So you can see the snakes, and they put them on your naked body.
Yes.
How many?
It depends where you go and how varied
it is. I saw a video of two.
Yeah, some
like massage.
Some have got massive snakes and only have like one or two, and then some have like loads.
Are the snakes oiled up? Mm-hmm. So the snakes are doing the massage by their movement.
Yeah.
The movement of a snake is massaging you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anyone looking after the snake?
There's someone there, the snake owner.
Yeah.
The snake owner. What's the snake owner called? Elvis.
I did read a quote from one of the snake owners that said, you know, you have to put your trust in this animal.
Yeah, he only said it once.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Excuse my Francais, Rach, but this is apps. There's a pain in the ass joke here, but I can't find it. But so what kind of snake?
There was...
How big?
I think I read somewhere about a boa constrictor.
But you know why they're called boa constrictors, don't you?
Because they strangle you, is that right? Or eat you?
Yeah.
Both, they kill you.
Yeah.
Non-venomous ones, hopefully.
Don't get me wrong, the ones in New York, obviously they weren't using them sort of snakes. That was more like Indonesia bound.
Okay.
There was all different snakes.
I genuinely don't know what to say to you. Apart from never come on the show and lie again.
Wait, it'll cost you £80 to have one of them.
£80? Yes. Can you imagine how tense your body would be and the massage horrific you'd need after that? I want to try it, do you?
No.
What's the thing that you read about and thought it was so outlandish, but then actually would, you know, converted, brought it over and thought, actually, this is brilliant? Was there anything that you just thought sounded too out there but actually loved? Or is anything just as too out there, full stop?
Treatment.
Mm. Yeah. To be fair, the vampire facial, when that first hit and everyone saw it, and I thought...
It looks scary, don't it?
Yeah.
So explain that.
It's basically you withdraw your blood from your arm and they separate the plasma from the blood, and then they kind of roll it into your face with microneedling, and you can inject it into your face as well.
Hang on. When you come to my studio. So someone, and when you say they, are we
doctor
saying someone qualified?
Yeah.
A snake. Yeah. So someone takes your blood, separates it somehow. Yep. How do you separate blood?
It's in a machine.
You put it in a machine and it spins.
So the white, the plasma is...
Separates.
And is that the stuff you want?
Yeah.
You want the plasma?
Yeah.
What do they do with your old blood?
They chuck it.
Drink it.
Maybe.
Okay, so you've got how much? What, pint? How much pints? How much blood are you losing?
I don't actually know in detail how much. I wouldn't say massive amounts, just enough to cover your face.
Okay, yeah. So so the blood's gone. It's just a pint of white blood cells, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Then what's in plasma then that's so good for your face?
It's growth factors, nutrients. It speeds up cell renewal. So,
it does sound good.
Yeah, it's gonna make the collagen in your skin plumper. And
so then you get microneedles which puncture your skin.
Yeah,
and then you just roll it on.
And you can inject it as well, which is an alternative to sort of filler.
Some people like just smear it on, so it goes, and then some people can inject it into the skin.
And. How instant is the result? I mean,
it's quite straight off.
Yeah, well, you're a bit red for, I think, like, a few days. But, yeah, people see good results.
And how long do the results last?
I'd say anywhere. It depends how many you have. You can't just have one off treatment. You would probably need about three or four. But it would... I'd say, yeah, you'd need about 3 or 4. And then I'd say you'd have a maintenance, like one a year after you've done the intense 3 or 4.
And it's so it plumps, so it is an anti-aging.
Yeah.
Makes
basically,
you look young again.
It causes trauma to your skin.
Yes, it does.
But when you get trauma to your skin, the cells sort of group and think, okay, we need to fix this. So it rushes everything to the surface. And then you're putting on that plasma that will help it grow and stimulate and rejuvenate the skin.
You ever heard of oil of Yule? If I said Nivea, would that ring a bell? Can't you just do these things? That's so terrifying. Bloody hell.
It is terrifying, but the science behind it, actually does work.
Well, these things do. There is a logic, isn't there? Yeah. I'm not sure how logical.
I don't know if I would personally.
Wouldn't you?
No, I think it's a
you've
bit.
You're both obviously very beautiful, but both amazing skin.
Thank you.
Yeah, skin's nice. Let's have a song. You know who's got good skin? Bruno Mars. A sexy motherfucker. Give me your attention, baby. I gotta tell you a little something about yourself. You're one of our flawless. Ooh, you a sexy lady. But you walk around here like you wanna be someone. Bruno Mars does the snake thing.
Sorry, did I say
I'm sorry, are we on? How tall do you think Bruno Mars is? Let's all play How Tall Is Bruno Mars? Yaz?
I'm saying 5'6".
You're saying 5'6". Do you know that?
No.
Are you just guessing that?
Guessing.
Pam?
5'8".
Producer Rach?
I know, somewhere.
Oh, you do know. I'm saying... Sorry, what did you say? 5'6"?
Yeah.
5'6", 5'8". I'm saying 5'5". Boom!
Oh my god. He's close. Like an inch taller than me. Is he meant to be that small? You know what I mean.
Well, Prince, how tall was Prince? Prince was about 5'5", wasn't he? Oh,
they always seem so much bigger on TV.
With my earlier guests, we were talking about who's the person that breaks bad news to you. Mine is my brother Patrick. Bad news, someone famous has died. My brother Patrick's the one that usually tells me when someone famous has died. Who's your person?
Well, can I just tell you this? Michael Jackson died on my wedding day.
What a piece of shit. What an upstaging piece of shit.
I was like, how do I ever live up to this now? So now, every time it's my anniversary, people write on my Facebook, oh, can you believe Michael Jackson died? I'm like...
Sam, who was just on, his graduation, his college kind of graduation party was on the night Michael Jackson died.
Yeah, you just never forget where you were.
Not when Michael Jackson died.
Especially when you get married.
I don't remember where I was.
Where were you? We're not accusing you of killing Michael Jackson, but where were you when Michael Jackson died? Were you upset?
I was. I really like Michael Jackson.
I was sucking on a mini milk. How was your wedding?
Yeah, it was lovely. Until he died. And then the whole night became a Michael Jackson tribute.
So we were all, you know, doing
the moonwalks and playing the songs. And yeah, it was strange. It was a strange night.
Yeah.
I just felt like I had to share that.
No, it was lovely. Thank you. He had some work. Anyway, I'm not sure we're allowed to talk about Michael Jackson anymore. I feel conflicted. Well, not conflicted. I'm sure I'm not allowed to talk about him. So we've done snakes. Mm-hmm. We've done blood. What were you going to say about putting me in a freezer?
A cryotherapy.
And what does that do?
It's a chamber of like minus 260 degrees.
Oh my God.
And it's really good for sort of muscle pain, headaches, joint pain, arthritis. A lot of athletes do it.
How does it work?
You just go in this chamber with your head poking out.
Just your birthday suit, pair of socks and some mitts.
Why are you wearing socks?
Your feet get cold sometimes.
Well, I think that's the least of your worries when you're in a house.
I don't know why.
How cold is it? Gloves or mittens?
Minus 264 degrees.
Does that exist? Wouldn't that kill you?
No,
it sends your body into shock mode.
all the treatments you've suggested so far are very relaxing. Because it's such a treat, isn't it? In these times when none of us have had any money, it's so nice to have a little treat. That's just relaxed, something to look forward to. I'd have a panic attack in that. And you can't get out, can you?
Yeah, you said that, didn't you?
Yeah.
I think you can get out if you
scream. No one can hear you scream.
But you're only in there 2 minutes.
Two minutes?
Similar to like an ice bath, we're saying. A lot of the athletes are doing it for pain.
2 minutes?
Yeah.
That's all you need.
You'd die any longer, probably, I would have thought.
And remind me what it does.
So it shocks your body into survival mode so that all the blood and nutrients rush to your vital organs. Apparently, it's like when you come out, it's like having 20 cups of coffee. That's how you feel.
It releases endorphins as well.
Yeah. Wow.
Anti-inflammatory activated as well.
It's actually been around a long time with athletes and things like that. But
You ever seen anyone before or after?
What, on the...
I saw Anthony Joshua.
Oh, did you?
So, yeah.
What was he wearing? Socks.
I didn't see that much.
Don't lie, yeah. So you saw him before and after? How?
No.
What did you see? How tall was he? Let's play that.
Oh, he's tall, ain't he? Must be at least
6'11".
6'11".
I'm saying 6'6".
I'm very bad with measurements.
My cousin was his first trainer.
Oh, really?
I come from a family of boxers.
He grew up in Watford, which is where I actually live.
Oh, yeah. Are you trying to trump my story?
Oh, sorry. Am I doing that?
Yes, is she like this at work? I was just telling you a delicious story about my cousin training this giant of an athlete, and you're talking about bloody Watford.
Yeah,
I'm sorry about the cup final.
Oh, yeah, no.
Were your kids upset?
No, they support Tottenham. Oh. Dad won't let them support Watford.
What would happen if they did?
Oh, I think he'd disown them. Okay. He threatens you'll have to leave the house if you don't support Tottenham.
What a lovely story. Yeah. So what are you saying, 6'6"?
Yeah.
6'11"?
Yeah.
I'm saying 6'4".
6'6". Damn!
Oh,
you're
good at this.
My dad's 6'6", and they look similar height. So.
Your dad's 6'6"?
Yeah.
How tall is your dad?
He's like... 5 foot nothing. Very short.
Mine was about 5'8", 5'9". Rach? Is this fascinating radio or not? So we've got snakes, we've got blood, we've got strawberries. Why is it called strawberry?
Strawberry.
I think they just wanted something really different that would stand out so people would know as soon as they see it. Because there's so many like lipo lasers and...
Yeah, laser liposuction is the...
They've got a banana lift. You'd be Pineapple lift. Anyway, I'd like to play a song. Okay. This is the... Why did you say that? Do you not like my music taste?
Yeah.
Okay. This is the Alessi Brothers and Oh Laurie.
Oh Laurie, with you all summer and after fall, I'll keep you warm through the winter. Ooh, 'cause I've noticed one thing.
The Alessi Brothers and Oh Laurie. Oh Laurie, I love her. Laurie's a nice name. Laurie Singer. Who's Laurie Singer? I think Laurie Singer. How tall is Laurie Singer? I think Laurie Singer was in Fame. I think she was the blonde one. Oh, I just dropped water. I'm joined in the studio by Pam and Yaz from Sejour, which is the most beautiful beauty salon. We love it, and it's on Fifth Street in Soho. It's really, I know they're supposed to be calm places, but yours really is. It just feels really zen and gorgeous until you get the, you know, the snakes.
We don't have snakes.
You're not going to do snakes, no, are you? You're not going to do snakes. So what's coming up at Sejour? Is there anything, what's new at Sejour?
So we have an app, and if you download that, Sejour London Beauty Clinic, and book your first treatment through it, you get £10 off a treatment.
Fabulous.
Good loyalty scheme as well.
Yeah.
Get complimentary treatments if you get more stamps every time you come.
Like this.
Keep them coming back. And you were saying something about Pride.
Oh, so, well, with Pride coming up, everyone's really excited. So we were thinking about doing glitter beards.
Glitter beards.
Yeah.
Glitter beards.
Yeah.
Beards of glitter.
Yeah.
I just think Do you have to have a beard to have the glitter?
We've got stencils as well, so they can have design in glitter.
Yeah, they could have a flag, glitter flag.
Yeah.
I actually really love it.
I know.
Yes.
I love glitter. Yaz isn't too keen, but I love glitter.
What kind of pattern will you do? Yeah, are we You do the rainbow flag?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, Yaz.
I think it'll look good. I might do my eyebrows.
Oh, yes. I like that.
I'd like that. You always do such lovely events at your place. Do you just still do events? Like, you know, like a glass of champagne?
We do one every summer. And we just launch Prosecco Nights every Thursday. You get unlimited champagne.
Every Thursday?
Yeah, with a manicure. Or so a pedicure. You can have a mani or pedi with your friends and unlimited Prosecco while you're having your treatment.
Is it nice Prosecco?
Yeah.
Finest. Is it good?
Highest bubbles Tesco has to offer.
Is it Tesco Finest?
No.
God, no. If you met someone outside a co-op, would you date them?
Outside of court.
Why not?
Mm. Would you prefer to meet them outside of Waitrose?
Oh, no, I don't think it would matter. Would you prefer Waitrose or Marks and Spencer's?
I'd go to Neva.
Oh, where'd you go?
Sainsbury's.
No, I just don't know why I said that. and what's on the app that we can't get on the website?
So we have the loyalty scheme on the app. Mm. So obviously when people come in and get their treatment, they basically zap a code and then it goes on to the app. And if they get six,
they get fully a mini stamped, treatment.
Yeah.
And 18, you get a deluxe treatment.
Oh.
And then obviously the £10 off with the app. And then we're always doing like little offers and sending out little push texts. Yeah.
So it's your elite. It's your elite lot.
Yeah.
Where do you think? So we were talking a little bit earlier about how, in a way, you kind of almost don't need to have surgery now. Where do you see beauty treatments going? Are they getting more organic? Are they getting more holistic? Are they being more eco-friendly? Or is this part of the world that just kind of doesn't care about that, so kind of just goes straight in? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
I think a bit of both. They're getting more bizarre, more natural.
Yeah, I think you have two ends. You have one side that is very holistic and sort of like what they're very aware of what they're putting in their body and being eco-friendly. And then I think you have the other side that is going more towards a sort of medical intrusive sort of procedures, like scientific. And then you just have that middle slot where it's just your standard beauty still.
And that's where people are going to go, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think... Oh, I mean, people are brave enough to do the knife stuff, but oh my God. Yeah. I was just going to say something and I totally forgot what it was. Where do you stand on the sperm facial?
Oh my God, I've seen that. How horrific is that?
What the
sperm facial?
Thanks.
I was actually going to bring it up with you today, but I felt like it was just...
Come again?
Oh, no.
Tell us, tell everyone how.
I thought it is too out there. I can't.
Well, explain it.
Well, I don't even know. I didn't even read in detail.
Protein.
I was just like,
Does it sting?
Oh, I don't know.
Let's change the subject because producer Rachel's going to get upset. Rach, so... Pam, you know me of old. Yaz, you've just met me, and I can imagine looking at me, you kind of think, oh, what a generous woman. What a generous, beautiful woman. And part of my generosity manifests in that I give my producer the gift of music. This one couldn't be less interested. Producer Raquel, producer Rach to my right. What have you chosen?
Let me play.
Oh, let's listen. You're on. You're all I need to get by. 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 As long as I got you, then baby, you know that you got me. Oh.
It's plain to see that you were my destiny. With my arms open wide, I threw away my pride. I sacrificed for you, dedicated my life to you. I will go where you lead. I'll be right there in a time of need. And when I lose my will, you'll be right there.
Looking back for us,
no, it ain't, baby.
We got our love and show love.
to get by. Yeah, goodbye.
What are you eating? What's in your mouth?
Go ahead, bar.
Excuse me?
Go ahead, bar.
I thought we were saying go ahead, bar. Go ahead, bae. Who was that?
That was Aretha Franklin, and the track was called All I Need to Get By.
Oh, amazing, amazing, amazing. You did very well. Hey, Producer H, I like to give our listeners take home. So can you please tell me what you've learnt from today's show? Yeah, this is this. Yeah, good. In your own time, Rach.
Not a lot.
You've learnt the height of...
I have.
Bruno Mars. Okay, turn the mic down. I'm sorry, Pam. I'm sorry, Yaz and Pam. I'm sorry you had to listen to that. I need to say goodbye and thank my guests. Thank you, Samuel Pollan. The Year I Didn't Eat is out now, published by Zuntold. For updates on all Samuel's brilliant projects, go visit samuelpollan.com and follow him on Twitter at Samuel_Pollan. Thank you, Pam and Yaz from Sejour. Yay!
Thanks for having
us. Oh, so brilliant to see you. Good luck, the baby. Little Elvis. For head to toe gorgeous, get yourself to Sejour on Frith Street. For updates on everything Sejour, visit sejourclinics.com and follow them on Twitter at @SejourLondonBC. And most of all, thank you for listening. That's it from me, BB Lynch. Until next time, stay tuned to your wonderful Soho Radio. And I'll leave you with Tom Brown and Funkin' for Jamaica. Love you, Soho.
Jumping up and down.